Welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iFormRx, and today we're going to be talking about a monoclonal antibody, canakinumab, which targets interleukin-1 beta. Now, traditionally, we treat atherosclerotic disease by addressing modifiable cardiovascular risk factors for cardiovascular disease, such as LDL cholesterol, blood pressure, weight, particularly abdominal adiposity, and of course, tobacco use. And we use antiplatelet agents to prevent the platelet activation and aggregation provoked by atherosclerotic lesions. Now, although we've known for quite some time now that there is a link between systemic inflammation and cardiovascular events, reducing systemic inflammation has never been an explicit goal of therapy. Canakinumab, which has a strong anti-inflammatory effect, seems likely to change our approach by making systemic inflammation a key therapeutic target. The canakinumab anti-inflammatory thrombosis outcome study, better known as the CANTOS study, was recently published in the New England Journal of Medicine in August 2017. And joining me today to talk about the CANTOS study is Ian Hatley and Scott Pearson. Doctors Hadley and Pearson are PGY2 ambulatory care pharmacy residents with the University of Colorado Skaggs School of Pharmacy, and both have had several experiences in cardiology and lipidology clinics this year. Well, Ian, Scott, I want to welcome you both to the iFormRx podcast.
Hi, Stuart. Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you. We're looking forward to discussing the CANTOS trial results with you here today.
So before we get started, Ian, Scott, I want you to imagine you're seeing a patient, a 69-year-old female, in your primary care clinic for a routine follow-up visit. And the patient states she's feeling great, she's walking 20 to 30 minutes every day, and is eating right. Indeed, she reports that she's lost 15 pounds in the past year. As you review her chart, you learn that BL has had an MI about 4 years ago. In addition to coronary artery disease, she also has a history of high blood pressure, dyslipidemia, and she's obese. Now, she's currently taking low-dose aspirin, ramipril, chlorthalidone, amlodipine, and rosuvastatin. Her current weight is 197 pounds, and her BMI is 33.4. Her blood pressure today in clinic that you measured is 126 over 66, and she had a Chem7, a fasting lipid profile, and an hsCRP drawn this morning. And the results look pretty good. Her blood glucose was 92. She has an LDL of 61, HDL of 42, triglycerides of 107, and her C-reactive protein, or hsCRP, was 2.4 milligrams per liter. So before we get into the specifics of the CANTOS study, can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that are going through your mind as I read this case, and what additional information might you want to collect and assess during this encounter? And are there any additional treatment options that you'd consider at this point?
Yeah, those are great questions. So some things that stick out to me are that this patient has a history of coronary artery disease. She is appropriately on what appears to be a high-intensity statin. Her blood pressure is controlled, and although we do not know what her baseline LDL was to assess whether she has already achieved 50% LDL lowering, her current LDL is less than 70. She also appears to be working very diligently on lifestyle modifications, although she is still obese. Additionally, her hsCRP is elevated, indicating that she has residual systemic inflammation.
Stuart, I agree with Scott in that I would want to confirm this patient's current dose of rosuvastatin. This is important because if she is not currently on 20 or 40 milligrams, both of which are considered high intensity, her statin therapy is not optimized. So increasing her dose to 20 milligrams or even 40 milligrams should be her first therapeutic option, as she is clearly indicated for a high-intensity statin with her history of an MI. Additionally, this change would likely lead to a reduction in her hsCRP. This has been demonstrated in numerous statin studies, including a post-hoc analysis of the PROVIT-TIMI-22 trial and in the JUPITER trial. However, if rosuvastatin is already optimized, there aren't many other therapeutic options for this patient because she has already met her LDL threshold of less than 70. If she had not met that threshold on a maximum dose statin, she would have been indicated for either ezetimibe or a PCSK9 inhibitor as non-statin therapy for an additional LDL and cardiovascular risk lowering. So really, her options include optimization of statin therapy if possible, and continue to increase lifestyle modifications as tolerated for continued weight loss.
So Ian, in the commentary you wrote for iFormRx entitled Inflammatory Statements About Cardiovascular Risk Reduction, the CANTOS trial, you talked about the potential role of anti-inflammatory drugs in patients with atherosclerotic disease. So can you briefly tell us some of the earlier evidence using anti-inflammatory drugs to reduce cardiovascular events?
That's the kicker, Stuart. We don't have any clear evidence to demonstrate cardiovascular risk reduction by solely targeting inflammation. As I mentioned earlier, we do have a lot of evidence to support that statins reduce hsCRP in addition to LDL. In the PROVE-IT-TIMI-22 trial, patients who achieved an hsCRP of less than 1 actually had the lowest rates of recurrent events, regardless of the LDL that was achieved. The JUPITER trial, on the other hand, randomized otherwise healthy individuals without hyperlipidemia, but with an hsCRP level above 2. They randomized these patients to either rosuvastatin 20 milligrams or placebo. And the results demonstrated that rosuvastatin decreased the hsCRP by about 37%, and this was associated with a 44% relative risk reduction in the primary composite MACE outcome after a mean follow-up of almost 2 years. So the results of these two trials, in addition to the significant amount of research that has been dedicated to characterizing the role of inflammation in atherosclerosis, were the impetus for the creation of the CANTOS study.
So, Ian, the results of the CANTOS study suggest that canakinumab might be a useful agent to reduce cardiovascular risk by targeting systemic inflammation. For those in our audience who haven't read the paper, can you give a brief summary of the study design and its major findings?
Of course. CANTOS was a double-blind, placebo-controlled trial that randomized patients with a history of coronary artery disease and high levels of systemic inflammation to one of 3 doses of canakinumab or placebo as an additional secondary prevention strategy. And almost 90% of these patients were already taking statins. So CANTOS hypothesized that canakinumab would result in significant reductions in major adverse cardiovascular events. And after a mean follow-up of 3.7 years, only the 150 milligram dose of canakinumab was associated with a statistically significant 15% relative risk reduction in the primary composite outcome. As for adverse effects, a few were significantly more common with canakinumab, which included neutropenia, thrombocytopenia, and fatal infection or sepsis.
So, Scott, tell us a little bit about what you believe are the key strengths and limitations of the CANTOS study. Are there any major sources of bias, confounders, or other threats to the internal validity of this study?
You know, overall, Stuart, this was a very well-designed study. Strengths included the large international study population, well-matched baseline characteristics between groups, including LDL cholesterol, which was important in order to show that the effects of canakinumab were completely independent of LDL lowering. Now, a potential source of bias does lie in the fact that this was an industry-funded study, and the sponsor was responsible for data collection. However, we would say that the largest limitation was related to the study's external validity. The CANTOS trial only enrolled patients whose hsCRP was greater than or equal to 2. In the study, 20% of screened patients were excluded based on having low or normal hsCRP levels. And therefore, the results of this trial can really only be applied to those with elevated hsCRP. Further studies will be needed to determine if these effects would be replicated in patients with low or normal hsCRP.
So, Scott, currently canakinumab is FDA approved for juvenile idiopathic arthritis and several periodic fever syndromes, all of which are relatively rare diseases. So how should this study change practice, if at all? Do you think these findings are sufficiently compelling to change guidelines? Are there specific populations where you'd actually think about using canakinumab? And what about ML? Is this something that you consider for this patient case that we've been discussing?
I think that's the question we're all asking ourselves, Stuart. At this point, we do not see this study changing practice from a guideline standpoint. While the study did show a significant reduction in major adverse cardiovascular events with canakinumab treatment, the cost effectiveness is currently not there. The number needed to treat with canakinumab extrapolated over 3 years was 194. Current yearly costs of canakinumab at the 150 milligram dose are estimated to be around $77,000, making this modest benefit very difficult to justify. Now, what was compelling about this trial, and what will potentially change practice in the future, was the finding that residual inflammation can be targeted to further reduce cardiovascular events in patients who are already maximized on statin therapy. Based on this finding, we are sure to see additional trials which investigate treatment with other anti-inflammatory agents. There are actually currently trials underway investigating methotrexate as well as colchicine for similar indications. Now, another potential change which we may see in the future is incorporation of hsCRP in cardiovascular risk assessments, similar to how we currently assess LDL or blood pressure. Patients in whom you might consider starting an additional anti-inflammatory agent would be those with a history of coronary artery disease who are already maximized on statin therapy, but who do have residual inflammation. Based on the patient from this case's history and her hsCRP greater than 2, you could theoretically consider canakinumab for her. However, again, based on the cost effectiveness of canakinumab at this time, it would be rather difficult to justify the expense for its expected benefit. And we would likely defer this therapy and hope that the future brings us more cost-effective anti-inflammatory agents, which would provide similar benefit.
Well, Ian, Scott, I want to thank you both for joining me today to discuss the use of canakinumab to reduce cardiovascular risk in patients who already are taking maximum doses of guideline-recommended treatments and have evidence of systemic inflammation. I think it's clear from your comments that this treatment strategy has merit, but canakinumab might not be the appropriate agent because of cost-effectiveness reasons. The proof of concept is here, though, and we look forward to future trials. Well, tell us what you think. Only iFormRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free. Sign up today. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.